Well, he said he was just a victim of circumstances. He had been in trouble with the law before, and he just happened to be out there around this car, and he saw the cops come in. He hid there, and he guessed some guy, other guy, had left that money there. And I said, well, how do you account for having on the same clothes? He said, well, I don't know how that happened. He said, what do you think about it? What? Okay. He said, what do you think about my story? I said, I don't think it's worth a damn. I said, I think they'll convict you. He said, well, maybe it didn't. Come back tomorrow and I'll tell you another one. So, I mean, that really bothered me ethically, you know. I'm willing to take any guy's word for what he says and try to defend it on him. So I went back to Judge and said, Judge, there's a problem here. I said, I don't know what in the hell. This guy lied to me, obviously. After I told him he didn't have a, I said, what do you do? He said, well, why don't you go see Gregory? Find out from him what. So I said, well, I'll try him again. So I went over and he told me another story. He said, what do you think? I said, I don't think it's any better than one you had yesterday morning. He said, well, okay, maybe it isn't, but he said, this guy that's going to testify against me, my co-defendant, he's a queer. And when he takes the witness stand, I want you to ask him if he gets a queer. And he said, no, I can't ask him. That has nothing to do with it. He said, hell, if he doesn't, he said, I'm going to take the stand and blast you for not defending me. Well, that bothered me, too, so I said, well, I said, I guess I better go see Gregory on this. So I told him that. He said, not much you can do about it. He says, take the story he gives you. Next, don't comment on it. He takes a stand and blasts you. He says, the jury will just return the verdict quicker on the deal. So I did, but he really didn't take a stand. I told him if he did, he'd sure get convicted. He probably was anyway. So he didn't blast me, but it turned out all right. But I mean, I felt much better about it. I wasn't going into something I didn't know how to handle. He says, it's happened. Nothing you can do about it. He says, nothing wrong with it. You've done all you can do. So, I mean, he really gave me a sense of security that I'd have been scared to death, you know, first time I'd ever had anyone say, hey, I'm going to see what a bad attorney you are. He said, do the best you can. And he was very helpful. You could ask him anything you wanted to, and he would tell you honestly and no charge. I mean, it's really something. He was really helpful to attorneys.
Was he aware of his position in the bar, being the one who, was he like the big father?
I'm sure he was. But I don't think he took advantage of it. I mean, the fact that he just, I was speaking this gambling and whatnot. He didn't take advantage of it. I mean, it was just a weakness that he had.
Were there any other people in the bar who ever came close to being like Gregory?
Well, no, but I think that he made everybody in the bar better attorneys and better attorneys to represent their clients. I think from what he did, I think he saved everybody's clients lots of money because we all felt free to ask each other how to proceed, and you didn't have to go and worry about it and put in lots of time. And that's a lot of time saved. You know, some of the fees they charge today compared to what was charged in those days are just really, it's hard to justify.
What were your fees in
those days? Oh, I think $10, $15 an hour. Most real big cases. Many times a guy come in, settle something on a telephone call, you charge him $5. had one, but I think it was better known for not adhering to it than anything else. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see one of those fee schedules. I don't know whether I have anyone around, but they were like menus in restaurants, I guess. Bar Association. I don't know who might have one of those. I'm sure I had them. I remember seeing them on my desk, but it just never occurred to me they might be interesting someday. Oh yeah, I think they were both personal injury lawyers, and I'm sure they were working together all the time.
Have you started with him
again? I really don't know. I just knew of him through Marge and her husband, and I knew he came down here, and I know that they were probably the deans of a personal injury lawyers in Alaska.
I've never met him very well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That's where he started out.
When did you start working with Hayley Robson?
1953 or 4. Well, Paul, as I recall, Paul Robinson was getting in the investment field. He kind of wanted to withdraw from the active, handle his investments more than anything else. And I was, Wendell was in the legislature, and I was going to be left to do all the work. And I just felt it was time for me to get out, and so I went by myself, and we left on good friends. And Wendell got somebody else in. That's it.
When did you run for
the
legislature?
1956 for the 57 legislature. Well, it's rather interesting how it happened. With it. Just before the filing deadline in 1956, we were a Democratic, just a party, not a central committee, but just at a kind of one of these Democratic get-togethers. And they didn't have anybody to run for the seat at large, which was from Lucien Island, Canadian Border, and Yakutat, Gun Island. Three people said, "Why don't you run?" I said, "Well, I'm not going to get in a fight with someone. If somebody wants me to run and there's nobody else that wants to run, I'll go ahead and run, so it's okay." So I filed, and by God, the day after I filed, some other guy was there and the night filed. So I was in a contested case, even though he had been there. And if you'd have said he was going to run, I wouldn't have run. But it made me mad after that, so I got out of the campaign. And I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed politics. If it had been, if you could have made a living in it, I would have stayed in it because I really enjoyed it. Difficult to make that living in politics. If you already got it made, it's fine. So really I got in because the people requested, thought I could do a good job. I thought I could too. I really got interested after that. Wendell, I think it went in 51 or 49. Robinson had been in 51 or 53. You'd all had their feet wet, and I decided I better get mine too.
What about your practice?
Terrible. Your practice. That's the reason you. Well, that's one reason that they were interested in taking me in, because they were both in the legislature in 50. Wendell was in 51, and Robinson was thinking about it, so they were interested in having someone, and I wasn't particularly interested in politics. And I really did work my tail off, you know, during the 2 years they were there. But I didn't mind that. But it really is bad on your practice. In those days, you couldn't. It was limited 60 days, and even then it was bad. You spent 3 months trying to tell your clients that you wouldn't be able to do anything for 60 days. Then when you got back, it took 60 days for your clients to know you were back, and it really played havoc with your practice.
Were there a lot of lawyers who were in the legislature?
Yeah. I think about half the people in the legislature were trying to do it.
Did you know them all?
Yeah.
Know them before you've gone?
No, not all of them before. I got to know them quite well.
When you were down in Juneau for the legislature, this is the 57th
session. Yeah.
Compared to Juneau and its atmosphere,
the,
I'm thinking more of the
Leela
community, to Anchorage.
You mean at that time? Yeah. Oh, I think to a great extent they were similar to Anchorage. People, they all they knew each other, they were helpful to each other.
They had ferns,
though. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had Monaco, Eastall and Monaco, and you had Boutchieva's firm, and a few more. But I think, generally speaking, I didn't have too much contact with them from a legal standpoint, except I met them all. They were either lobbying for or against something most of the time, then you got to meet them.
Who were the lobbyists?
Well, Fred Eastall was always there representing someone. Mike Monagle was always representing someone. I'm trying to think of, out of Boutchieva's firm, there's always somebody out of there, and then there was, he died here, and I'm another firm. I guess that was out of Eastall's firm also. Bob Annis, that's right. But most of those firms had real good clients of whom they lobbied for. That was lots of their business.
What did they lobby for?
Well, you had them lobbying for the fish industry, mining industry, the forest industry, those people. And there you had them for the shipping industry, education, whatnot. Those people are stationed there. It's much easier to use those than what to ship someone in. So, like anything that you lobby for in the legislature, they were doing it. No, they had different interests.
Can you separate?
Oh, you mean by firms? No, I can't recall what. But really, you know, being an attorney and a lobbyist, you don't have to. You get paid for lobbying whether you believe in it or not. But I don't recall. And I know Annis was always, he always lobbied for one of the beer companies, one of the liquor companies. I'm not sure on, well, Bill Arnold was down there too at the time. Bill Arnold was with the salmon industry, I think my first year. That's when I got to know Bill. Wonderful guy to deal, I thought. Didn't always agree with him, but I mean, he's very agreeable to disagree with. Well, I don't know. I think lobbyists approach people based upon how they think someone needs to be approached. I felt like I would always approach direction on the basis that if I didn't know anything about it, I wanted to know anything about it, I wasn't going to make a decision, but I did. So people approach me on the basis of telling me what they perceive the problem to be and what they perceive the answer to be. And they took my word for it. I said, hey, I'm not going to support it, I'm going to support it with these conditions. I never had any big problem with lobbyists because I think they respected me, that I was going to make the decision, and I would tell them what I was going to do.
Did you ever have problems with other legislators who wanted to pursue
it? Well, I don't know, this is a story that I heard after I got out of the legislature. It always amused me. There's one legislator there that, from Fairbanks, he was always introducing legislation in regard to the liquor industry. Of course, he was always lobbying us to support those bills. And this was told to me by the Democratic National Committeeman after I was out of being Attorney General, after I became a judge, and it would have infuriated me if I'd have heard it at about the time it supposedly happened. But he mentioned the guy in Fairbanks. He said, you know this guy in Fairbanks, look at him. He said, the story he tells me is he gave this senator down there $10,000 to ensure that he could get this bill passed. And when the goddamn bill came up, all your senators voted against it. He thinks you lied to him. I said, and what he done, he supposedly spent that $10,000 to get our votes and never got. I said, well, it's a damn good thing we didn't hear about it at the time. But that's the only legislator. Other than that, I've had a legislator say, hey, I'd like to support this bill. But never to the extent that they kept introducing bills. Over the period of 4 years I was there, he was always introducing bills. And everybody just got to know that he was probably the lobbyist senator for him. And if it was a good bill, we voted for it. If it wasn't, we just didn't pay any attention to him.
Did you know Warren Taylor?
Yeah, really. Warren was a very brilliant guy. Knew how to get legislation through. And I could always know if he had a case involving, he was a lawyer. Because if he came to me and says, I've got a piece of legislation I want you to support because of this, I could always bet he had a case he was trying to get some legislation. I'd say, well, I'd think about it, and I would just ignore it unless it was. But you get to know how legislators work, and just to whether there's any merit or whether it's true. But he really was a brilliant guy, and he was Speaker of the House twice while I was there, and he was really a good legislator if he would just kept some of his personal. Oh yeah. Well, I guess it's all a perception. I had known his former wife. In fact, she had come to me at one time when I was in private practice to represent her, but I had known her through somebody. They'd lived in Kodiak at one time. So I had heard that they'd been litigating through the years, and I just didn't want to get involved in it. His wife and whatnot, she didn't. His former wife. He'd been married about 3 times, and this was one of the wives. Still litigating. So I just tried to steer clear of that. I had a great respect for him. So I just knew him well enough to know When's the appointment? Discussing one time about always attorneys asking too darn many questions, you know, and like witness. You ask enough and you're supposed to know when enough is. If you don't, you'll get more than you ask for. It's trying this guy in Nome. This is when he's in Nome up there. Assistant district attorney. I guess his dad was district attorney in the 1890s, and he was assistant district attorney. And they had this guy up there for ma'am, and he was prosecuting him. And the complaining witness was telling what happened. And he testified a guy bit his ear off and we let him go, and the defense attorney started out and he asked him a few questions. He got down to it and said, "You say you saw him, you say he bit your ear off?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "Now, how do you know he did?" He said, "Because I saw him spit it out." So he said, "Now you didn't ask any more questions." I met Harold. Really, the first time I met him was in his office. I was working for the Corps of Engineers, and I had bought a piece of land from Lenore Blanchard and her husband. I guess she's still here. She's a Lenore Blanchard, and he was her attorney. And she wanted to know who I wanted to draw the papers. I said, "Well, I'll draw them up because." And she said, "Well, I want my attorney to look at them." I said, "Well, that's fine." And I said, "You want me to go up to his office since he has an office?" I live out there. I never will forget. I went up there and I introduced myself. And I said, "Here's the papers that your client, Ms. Blanchard, wanted you to look at." He took them. He was real nice about it, but he said, "You know, you're violating the law." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You're drawing these legal papers." I said, "Well, I think you're wrong." I said, "I'm going to draw my own papers and whatever I want to." I said, "She just wanted you to look at them. That's up to you." "Well, I'm going to take you up to the bar association." I said, "Okay, you do that." So he did go to the bar association, but they never did come back to me. I found this out later because they told him he was clearly wrong. But Harold and I have always been good friends. I've never mentioned anymore. He's never mentioned anymore. But that's the way I met him. Made a real bad impression, you know. He going to take me before the bar association for. But he had just gone and practiced too, so I guess all of us have our little problems sometimes, you know. But we're always in good friends.
Did Judge Diamond go to the bar lunches?
Occasionally, not very often. Not very often.
Was he friendly with the bar?
Oh, yes. We'd usually have a Christmas party in those days at somebody's home, because there wasn't too many facilities except bars to have Christmas parties. He'd usually go to those. He and his wife would go there and have some wine or something. They'd stay a while and they wouldn't stay very long. But they were quite sociable in a rather reserved way.
Can you compare him to Judge McCary?
Well, there isn't much comparison, really. I think you can say of Judge McCrary, he was really dedicated and a hard worker, but he wasn't sure what he was doing. Many times he probably brought the bar together, but against him, that was a focal point for everybody to rally. Well, yes. yes, he had one defendant. I never will forget. We spent a whole afternoon down at the a bar meeting one day with Harold Stringer, and Harold was defending. We were trying, this was before his appointment. Harold was Republican National Committeeman, and we said, hey, you ought not to send your name up. He just didn't qualify. I hope Mac didn't get this because I'm probably getting. Oh, he'd gotten along with Mac, but this actually occurred. He knows it. And he knows, and I opposed him, but I never did oppose him. I think probably we were on good terms all the way through. I never did oppose him out in public. I opposed him in meetings. And we said, hey, you ought not to get him. We don't think he's qualified to do it. And Harold said, well, you get him whether you want him or not. I never will forget he told the bar that Harold. Well, he really, that wasn't, his taking that position wasn't like Harold at all. He's really an easygoing guy. And I think he probably let politics kind of override common sense in that case. And really, I think maybe Judge McCrary, and I don't think he intentionally so, knew that Stringer defended him so much that when this matter came up in which he was about to be censoring, that probably Mac overreacted in, against him and really did Stringer in his favor. I think that's the perception of some members of the bar who was there at the time. And actually that ruined Stringer's health. I mean, he was a real nice looking healthy guy, but that little tiff he had with the court. He got ulcers, he had operation, they weren't too successful. He finally left the state and went down as, I guess he's general counsel for the American Legion. Best I heard of him, he still was for 20 or 30 years. But he had a very nice family. Well, it was really unfortunate the way it happened. I mean, McCrary did real good in private practice, but he didn't have, I don't think he had the, I'm trying to think about it. Well, he's lacking in knowledge in one sense, but he just didn't have the attitude or temperament of a judge. Blew his top, too. It's right to blow your top, but you're supposed to blow it right, too. Well, I really hadn't thought about it too much. I remember they did. And this is merely speculation. Probably a combination of a number of reasons to get some governmental control or sanction governmental control over activities of members of the bar, so that you could do something about it. And I think primarily competition. Too many attorneys getting up here, and they were going to use it as a basis for keeping lots of attorneys out. In fact, there was two attorneys who took the bar and sued the Bar Association in Williams. Russ Arnett and Tom Fink. If you pick that up and all that. Tom Fink never went back. Russ did. But I think the perception was that it was used. That was one reason of getting too many attorneys up, and that was one way to keep many of them out. And I guess there was some good reason, too, that they wanted to improve the quality of the bar. I think you ought to contribute a little good place for it too. And I don't know, I suspect that there'd been some clients that had some bad experiences with some of the attorneys, and maybe the public was, some complaints with the public. I don't have any specific thing in mind now, but I just have something back in my mind that was some of the reasons given for legislation.
Has there been public complaints about
some of the attorneys not accounting for some of the, you know, I'm speaking, really I don't have any specific thing in mind. It's really kind of vague.
Rather than
legislature really coming in, and I think they want to get first shot at complaints rather than legislature making certain things fine is probably. I thought with a few exceptions it was quite good. There's been lots of talk about Windblom and what's the other, Drager. But other than their problems, I hadn't heard any great complaints that I can recall. I really hadn't sat down and thought about it until you mentioned it. I think probably the bar got better. Judge Calmarita's somewhere in that area. And I think it was before statehood. I may be wrong. Became secretary of the bar. And he ran pretty hard herd over these attorneys and passing on qualifications. Did a good job. Are my dates correct? I think that's. I think he did a lot for the bar of keeping out lots of people who just wanted to get up here because of the last one. In fact, he was too tough, I think. I think, as I recall, there was a number of cases where they contested either before the Board of Bar Examiners or maybe a couple of cases in court. I don't have any specifics on it. But he was on the ball.
Were there a lot of people who did this come up because it would allow them not necessarily have good qualifications?
I think that's true. I think that's true. It was true in all the professions. Lots of people came up to just make a. No, that was one of the big problems in territorial status. Everybody wanted to come up and make it their deal and get out. And really, it was a good setting to do so because, except for some old timers, everybody was up here was trying to do the same thing to get it made and get out. And there's really not many people here who are supervising him or looking over him, keeping him going.
What kind of reputation did lawyers have in the community?
I think probably it's higher than it is today. I think probably they had a higher status today because everybody knew them. There were some that people knew were not good, but I mean, it'd be difficult today to get go over last year and get many people to tell you how good or how bad. You know.
Did you ever have any
I think you had a better idea of how good or bad someone was in those days than you do now. Are you talking about 55?
59.
Oh, 59.
59.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about recommendation for judges?
Mm-hmm.
Or the judicial council? You're talking about the controversy in the judicial council about judges?
Right.
Yeah. I've heard lots of stories on it.
Don't tell me
so. One of them I heard from a member of the council, and it's been going around over the years. I've never heard it verified or denied. But in regard to the judgeship here. Did you hear that one? And the deal they made, they were going to submit named and you, the governor wouldn't accept, in order to get him to appoint someone that was not acceptable, that the governor could live with. And one of the members of the council, what the governor told him, he stuck him with a judge. he didn't buy it. He gave the worst. I didn't have it. It wasn't the Chief Justice. I know that's the only one that I was actually told by a member of the council on that, and I've known him for years, even before that. Since then, he's verified a couple of times. Oh, I'd rather not name. But I mean, he was on the losing side, and he went to the governor's door. He wasn't on the winning side because everybody lost, I guess, because the guy got appointed. Actually, it wasn't an act, but it was somebody else.
Oh,
it happened also later in Anchorage that they were doing something and got somebody they didn't want. Oh, certainly. By doing lots of lobbying and on the governor, setting up names, they made recommendations.
So there's certain people that could never have been chosen.
It was on the judicial council or where? What do you mean?
Where there's certain people who were nominated to the judicial council that everybody knew.
No, you brought up one of them in Fairbanks. No, well, no, but one of them. What happened was you had defense attorneys and personal injury attorneys. We really didn't have a big fight. And each one of them had to get one of their attorneys on the judicial council. There's a big fight over that.
So if
and there was a big fight over my coming on the bench because of that one. I did. One of them was still on there. He felt like, well, the judge, and of course, that was, they were trying to work a deal. Every time they were trying to work a deal of balancing the bench on the basis of their perception of who was had been defense attorneys and prosecution, or who had been defense and personal injury attorneys in private practice, both on getting on the council and getting judges. I don't know what, well, I know who was fighting me. I don't know what his perception was, I guess, because I had never handled any personal, well, I had handled personal injuries, but I didn't specialize in it, and I had not done much defense. I was primarily a business attorney. But one of the members on the judicial council really made a big issue of my health, everything. I really had to.
What was wrong with your
health? Well, I had ulcers and it had treatment, but it had been a couple of years since I had it. One of the members not long ago was just mentioning that. He was the one that had him bring me up before the judicial council so they could look at me. And,
who was that?
Hmm?
Who was that?
That was Judge Butcher. He was on the judicial council at the time. Because someone else was fighting my being recommended to go.
So Judge Butcher was the one that was fighting
you? No, it wasn't Butcher. Attorney from Fairbanks, Bob Perry.
Oh, Bob Perry.
Well, and I think the reason they perceived so, because I was Attorney General, and I was called the night before the applications closed by Delaney Wiles and Moore's firm, which Plummer was in. He was not district judge. And they wanted me to put in. I said, well, I have no great interest in it, but if you want to put my name in, I'll honestly put it in. I assume that's the only, I don't know how it happened because I didn't, the politics was with someone else. I didn't get involved in it, but I know I had a hell of a time.
When did you return to after Rita?
Yeah, first one after Rita. I was on June 1, 60. Until June of 60, after June of 62, about 2 years. Yeah, I was Attorney General when I was appointed to bench. In fact, I was in Puerto Rico to the National Attorney General's Conference when I was appointed. And I had a trip to Mexico, man, my wife and I, and they wanted me to come back, and I had to cancel that. I really wasn't looking. They wanted me. I said I'd take it if they, and I got it, so I can't.
During the first round of appointments, why weren't you in there?
Well, I didn't put in. I really wasn't interested. I was really enjoying being in the legislature. I had a. Leadership role, and I enjoyed. I was in judiciary. I was in helping set up judiciary, helping set up state government. I was really, really not interested in it at that time. I don't know whether I could have got it if I had been, but it just wasn't interested. Some of the other people were interested in. Been here a long time. And I don't know. You'd have to ask the governor that. I suspect, in all fairness, and I don't think anything wrong with that, I suspect some political debt for paid. Long time Democrats, I don't think any. Were any Republicans appointed? I don't think so. I think Democratic landslide and landslide went to the judiciary, so, and all of them are long-term, solid Democrats. I think they were all called, but maybe one exception.
Do you think that the
I was Attorney General in the beginning of it, I think. It lasted over a period of a year or so, I think. And I had, let's see, I was appointed to the bench in June of 62. I guess it was 63. I was there. July, August, I was at first National College of Judiciary. I went to the first one, which was in 1963. That's when it came out. National College of Judiciary. I went to the first National College of Judiciary, which was set up in Elton, Boulder, Colorado. It was a national college for judges, new trial judges. And I was on the bench, but I was not in. I was not presiding judge, and I was trying to learn how to be a judge, and really I was not aware of too much going on. I was really not involved in it. It was the Chief Justice and his party. We kind of knew about it, but I just didn't have any. I knew there was lots of animosity, but I didn't know yet. Not at the trial bench level, because it was some rules that the Supreme Court was trying to put together. But I recall from my standpoint, I was.